Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. Three, two, one. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. How you doing, Dominic?
Crudy, I'm fantastic. Evan on the board, our fair audience. Happy Friday Eve to us all. Got a big show today. Can't wait to get to it, man.
You're exuberant.
I am. It's very exciting. I'm very happy today because, of course, Donald Trump testifies tomorrow. How many times do you think Trump tomorrow in testimony for what? Tish James at the New York Attorney General and the fraud case? How many times do you think Trump will say, I plead the fifth?
I don't
every
remember.
Time? Every time. So you know, he's not sleeping too well tonight, I would imagine. And that makes me just a little giddy.
The fact that his former wife, his ex-wife, Ivana Trump, she died today. Apparently, aged, what, 73?
Mm-hmm.
The mother of Don Jr. and Eric and Ivanka. She must be so proud. Anyways, she passed today. Do you think that will tear at his conscience overnight?
Don't you have to have a conscience to have one be torn? I heard cardiac arrest for the former Mrs. Trump. And I can't help but think that maybe she died of a broken heart because her kids are a bunch of D-bags.
Could be.
Just saying.
Now, Trump left Ivana Trump, who apparently, by all accounts, was a very capable woman. And Trump didn't like that.
No.
So he moved on to mother of Tiffany, Marla Maples, right? She was the mistress and then became the wife. So then he married Marla Maples. She was a Georgia peach. And, you know, don't hear much from Tiffany. I think she's a college grad now. And then Melania, and talked about not hearing a lot. Melania, she's been kind of scarce. I mean, I'm sure Trump bumps into her every 3 weeks or so, but
I don't care. Do you?
No. So condolences to the Trump kids? Question mark? I mean, there's no good time in life to lose one's mother.
No doubt.
Couldn't have happened to a nicer family? What are you thinking, Dom? I'm not sure what that expression means.
I think I said it, man. I don't care. Do you? I mean, I feel bad for Ivana, as mentioned. She seems like a fine enough woman and sucks to have to die. And at 73, it's a shame that it couldn't have been her ex instead of her. But it is what it is. People come and go all the time.
Guess who else is coming and going, Dom? Steve Bannon going to trial on Monday.
What? He asked the judge twice, please, can I delay it on Monday? And then yesterday, please, can I delay it? No, you may not.
You know why? Because you got to ask three times, Dom.
Is that the rule?
Candyman. Or Beetle.
Where's Dr. Evil's secret lair?
Got to ask it three times. We're going to talk about lots of topics today and maybe some big news in hour two, Dom. Depends on our pal Bruce Murphy over in Urban Milwaukee. We'll see how the fine journalist, I understand he's working on a piece, could be big news, could affect all of you, our fair listeners. But Dom, let's start with a story. I got to tell you, my kids, my teenagers, they use this vocabulary, and I'm going to use it today. They say sometimes things are sketchy or kind of sketch. Well, you know what's kind of sketch? The reporting at The Intercept and now at other places that the Secret Service agents deleted their text messages from January 5th and January 6th, and the deletions came after they were requested.
That seems extremely sketchy.
A little sketchy. Dom, let's start with the Intercept today. What do you say, man? Don't always start there, but...
No, I like the Intercept. Let's do it, man.
Secret Service deleted January 6th text messages after oversight officials requested them. A letter given to the January 6th committee says the erasure took place shortly after oversight officials requested the agency's electronic communications. Ken Klippenstein, the reporter thereof. The Secret Service erased text messages from January 5th and 6th, according to a letter given to the January 6th committee and reviewed by The Intercept. The letter was originally sent by the Department of Homeland Security, Office of Inspector General, to the House and Senate Homeland Security Committees. Though the Secret Service maintains, and listen closely, yeah. wait for this one, yeah. Dom. I mean, I think my teenager would come up with a better excuse than this. This one's kind of sketch, but listen closely. Though the Secret Service maintains that the text messages were lost as a result of device replacement program. So, you know, we're updating the cell phones and, oh, look, all the text messages are gone from January 5th and 6th.
The dog ate their homework? I mean, really? Really? I mean, it sounds like the Blues Brothers when Belushi is talking to Carrie Fisher. I lost my homework. I don't have any money for cab fare. You know, are you really? Really? The result, messages were lost as a result of a device replacement program. Yeah, they took the devices and threw them in the trash.
Did they clean them with the cloth, Don?
Yeah.
Anyways.
Wipe the hard drive.
The letter says the erasure took place shortly after oversight officials requested the agency's electronic communications. And shocker, Don, the Secret Service did not respond for comment. The Secret Service has emerged as a key player in the explosive congressional hearings on the former president, you know, Trump, role in the storming of the Capitol on January 6th. In an attempt to prevent the 2020 election results from being certified. That day, then Vice President Mike Pence, we've talked about this. That day, then Vice President Mike Pence was at the Capitol to certify the results. When Reuters entered the building, the Secret Service tried to whisk Pence away from the scene. I'm not getting in that car. Right? Jamie Raskin brought note to this statement. I'm not getting in the car, Pence reportedly told the Secret Service detail on January 6th. If I get in the vehicle, you guys are taken off. Had Pence entered the vice presidential limo, he would have been taken to a secure location where he would have been unable to certify the presidential election results, plunging the U.S. into uncharted waters. One more quote here, Tom. People need to understand that if Pence had listened to the Secret Service and fled the Capitol, this could have turned out a whole lot worse. A congressional official, not authorized to speak publicly, told The Intercept. It could have been a successful coup, not just an attempted coup.
Curdy, as you mentioned, Rep. Jamie Raskin, a member of the J6 committee, called Pence's terse refusal, "I'm not getting in the car," the, quote, six most chilling words of this entire thing I've seen so far. But the Office of Inspector General's letter suggests key evidence in the form of the Secret Service electronic communication may never see the light of day. The Department of Homeland Security, Secret Service's parent agency, is subject to oversight of the DHS Office of Inspector General, which had requested records of electronic communications from the Secret Service between January 5th and 6th of 2021 before being informed that they'd been erased. It is unclear from the letter whether all the messages were deleted or just some. DHS officials have also pushback on the OIG's records request by arguing that the records must first undergo review by DHS attorneys, which has delayed the process and left unclear if the Secret Service records would ever be produced, according to the letter. Asked about the matter, DHS OIG spokesman told The Intercept, "To preserve the integrity of our work and to protect our independence, we do not discuss our ongoing reviews or our communications with Congress." A top Secret Service official allegedly involved in the attempt to spirit away Pence on January 6th remains in a leadership position at the agency. Tony Ornato, remember that name? A Secret Service agent whom Trump made the unprecedented decision to appoint as his deputy White House chief of staff, reportedly informed Pence's national security advisor Keith Kellogg on January 6th that agents would relocate the vice president to Joint Base Andrews. You can't do that, Tony, Kellogg reportedly told Ornato. Leave him where he is at. He's got a job to do. I know you guys too well. You'll fly him to Alaska if you have the chance. Don't do it. Ornato has denied the account. And today, Crudy, Ornato serves as the assistant director at the Secret Service's Office of Training. So, Tony,
Tony does it?
Is that how you do it? Tony does it? When you get the request, just, you know, have a, what do they call it? What was the terminology they use, Crudy? Well, a device replacement program. Sorry.
Well, let's not forget the testimony of Cassidy Hutchinson was contradicted by Tony Ornato. And that's not Tony Orlando and Don. It's a different guy. But Tony Ornato is the same Trump sycophant reportedly who's now been accused of what? Denying things like three different ways. And he's been contradicted in at least two of those.
And now, and he continues to what? Serve as the assistant director of the at the Office of Training. One more.
He's
paragraph
got a credibility
here.
Issue.
I mean, you think?
I do.
I mean, anybody, every one of those Secret Service agents who had anything to do with deleting or engaging in the replacement program should all be under oath, under question, and perhaps fired. Agencies, especially those involved in national security, often use the sensitivity of their work to sidestep oversight, stymieing the work of the OIG. It's not uncommon for inspector generals, particularly effective ones, to face institutional resistance during the course of investigations. Tasked with rooting out waste, fraud, and abuse, inspector generals' oversight responsibilities are not always welcomed. Yeah, you think? Don't you think it'd be, I don't know, somewhat important to know what the Secret Service was thinking and doing? I'm saying I need to see it, but somebody needs to see it. Somebody needs to put the pieces together. That is certainly part of the puzzle, especially when you got a guy like Ornato, who Trump brought into his inner circle with the credibility problem, now leading up, what, the training office? Oh, my God.
Seems a little sketchy. It's a little sketchy. Folks, we are the Devil's Advocates. Never sketchy, often entertaining. We just ask you, great show or greatest show ever? Come back with us. You can always be a part. They're always better when you participate. 844-967-2789. And I want to talk about Bannon next. You know, I think Bannon has got some real nuggets to offer, Dom.
I believe so.
And Lordy, I think we got the tapes we're going to play for you, our fair audience. Come back. It's a Thursday. Wish it was a Friday. We'll get there soon. More Devils. We'll be right back.
Someone stole my car. There was an earthquake. A terrible flood. Locust. It wasn't my fault. I swear to God.
Of the time, they're right every time. The Devil's Advocates.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. It's the 420 segment. Light them if you got them. Call us on the phones, 844-967-2789.
Dominic, we're getting to the Bannon sound momentarily, but this intriguing headline you posted at the Devil's Advocates radio Facebook page. Conservative group finds, and here's the quote, absolutely no evidence of widespread fraud in 2020 election. Now, we've seen similar headlines out of the great state of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. They did their own impartial review, apparently, but they came up with the very same conclusion we've said since day one. There wasn't fraud. Joe Biden's the president. He won the state of Wisconsin. Let's see what these prominent conservatives have to say, Dom. Count them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Prominent conservatives released a 72-page report. Didn't read the report, got to be honest, folks.
We're not going to count 72 either.
Refuting claims of election fraud in the 2020 presidential election in dozens of unsuccessful cases brought forth by former President Trump and his allies. The group, which includes former federal judges, Republican senators, and Republican-appointed officials, said they reviewed all 64 court cases Trump and his allies initiated, challenging the election outcome, saying they had reached an unequivocal conclusion that the claims were unsupported by evidence.
Evidence, shmevidence. You don't need evidence. Just make the claim. I mean, this is like the battle in the White House the night before Trump tweeted out the call to arms, right? All Cipollone was asking, where's the evidence? Where's the evidence? Oh, says the Kraken. I can't believe you're asking me that. You should know.
Here is what the 8 prominent conservatives said, Dom. We conclude that Donald Trump and his supporters had their day in court. Actually, several of them, right? Like 64?
64?
And failed to produce substantive evidence to make their case. The 8 conservatives repeatedly condemned the election fraud claims, but said they have not changed their allegiance to the Democratic Party and have no ill will towards Trump nor his supporters. The group consists of former senators John Danforth, Republican from, I think that's Missouri, longtime Republican lawyer Benjamin Ginsburg, I've heard of him, former federal judge Thomas Griffith, David Hopp, chief of staff to former House Speaker Paul Ryan, former judge J. Michael Luttig, he gave some testimony, didn't he, for the January 6th committee, former federal judge Michael McConnell, Theodore Olson, he was the former Solicitor General under President W. Bush, and former Senator Gordon Smith, Republican from Oregon.
All rhinos, all corrupt.
One more quote, Dom. We urge our fellow conservatives to cease obsessing over the results of the 2020 election and to focus instead on presenting candidates and ideas that offer a positive vision for overcoming our current difficulties and bringing greater peace, prosperity, and liberty to our nation. Well, that would sound like a governing platform, and the Republicans, as near as I can tell, Dom, have long since abandoned governing.
Curtie the Hill has reached out to a Trump spokesman for comment. The group's report includes an analysis of the claims in each court case challenging the election results in 6 swing states Biden narrowly won in 2020, Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, Pennsylvania, and Wisco. The cases included unfounded widespread claims of improperly counted ballots, rigged voting machines, mail-in ballot irregularities, ineligible voters who cast ballots, and officials who blocked access for observers in polling places. The claims have also been a focus of numerous investigations, including the House Select Committee's investigating the January 6th riot and a criminal investigation led by Fulton County GA District Attorney. Two members of the group, Ginsburg and Luttig, have testified publicly, as Curtie mentioned, to the House panel. Luttig served as an informal advisor to then-Vice President Mike Pence in the lead-up to January 6th, telling Pence he could not constitutionally overturn the Electoral College votes. The 8 conservatives acknowledged the election administration was not perfect Thursday, noting a relatively small number of cases where authorities found irregularities. Quote, but there is absolutely no evidence of fraud in the 2020 presidential election on the magnitude necessary to shift the result in any state, let alone the nation as a whole. In fact, there was no fraud that changed the outcome in even a single precinct. It is wrong and bad for our country for people to propagate baseless claims that President Biden's election was not legitimate. Beyond the court cases, the conservatives' reports also discuss post-election reviews conducted outside of the legal system by 6 swing states, all of which, the group said, also failed to support Trump's allegations. In one example, the group noted the Arizona State Senate's review of Maricopa County election results, which was conducted by a private firm, the Cyber Ninjas. The firm's final analysis found 99 additional votes for Biden and 261 fewer votes for Trump, according to the report. The Cyber Ninjas later shut down after a judge ordered it to pay $50,000 a day in fines until it turned over public records to the Arizona Republic. In another example, the conservatives referenced a full manual recount of Georgia ballots by Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, which confirmed Biden's victory in the state. Trump pressured him in a now infamous call to find enough votes to reverse Biden's victory in the state. Their final quote here, there is no principle of our republic more fundamental than the right of the people to elect our leaders and for their votes to be counted accurately. Efforts to thwart the people's choice are deeply unpatriotic and undemocratic.
You think? So the Wisconsin Institute of Law and Liberty came to a similar conclusion here in the state of Wisconsin. But what happened? The Wisconsin Supreme Court, and there are 3 very partisans, one swing jurist, also conservative, But the three very partisans, they basically said, you know, just short of let's throw the Electoral College vote to Donald Trump. I mean, I've joked in the past, Trump effectively lost the state of Wisconsin by one vote. Brian Hagedorn, one Supreme Court justice, because the other three conservatives were more than willing to take up the cause. And although Trump was, what, 63-1 and really more like 0-64, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In the court of law, there was one court that was damn near willing to hear the case and maybe uphold it, throw it to the state legislature. Well, the very corrupted Wisconsin Supreme Court, or at least the very corrupted three Republican representatives them thereof, Rebecca Bradley, not the good one, Patience Rogensack, and Annette Ziegler.
Isn't one of them retiring?
Rogensack, she is the Chief Justice. She is retiring, not seeking re-election. April of 2023 will determine the balance of the court, and we will get to pick the next Supreme Court Justice. You and I, Dom, will pick for the people.
All right.
Come back, more Devils.
I feel like I'm taking crap.
The Devil's Advocates. So relevant, they have one foot in tomorrow.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Get it right like 63% of the time, Dom. I am absolutely right on this point. We've argued extensively on the point. I have supporting reporting from the Daily News. Former President Donald Trump suggested in a new interview that he has decided to run for president again in 2024 and is only considering when to launch his campaign. My big decision will be whether I go before or after
the indictment.
Midterm election.
Oh, I'm sorry, the midterm.
That's clever, though. Trump told New York Magazine in an interview published Thursday, asked flat out if he will run for the White House. Trump teased that he has already made that decision. Another new report in the Washington Post says that Trump will jump into the race in September to rally his supporters before the midterm elections, in which Republicans hope to retake control of Congress. One advisor put the odds at better than 2-1 that Trump announces his campaign before the midterms. Trump may believe that sooner he starts actively campaigning, the easier it will be to head off potential rivals within the GOP. You know, think Ron DeSantis. Trump said,
I think a lot of people would not even run if I do, because if you look at the polls, they don't even register.
So Trump thinks he's the front runner. And I also saw it other publications, Dom. He sees it as a get out of jail free card. He thinks if he runs, he's going to somehow pardon himself or stay ahead of the law. And
does that make any sense to you, Crudy? I mean, he would have to run and win and stay out of jail before then, and then what? Be an indicted person in the White House?
Pardon himself.
So you think that he would pardon himself? These things have to happen. So here's the deal. When you run, that doesn't give you any privilege whatsoever.
Gotcha.
Even when you win, it does not give you any privilege whatsoever.
Not even over Steve Bannon? Because he apparently waived the privilege over Bannon.
It doesn't give you the protection of the Office of Legal Counsel from the White House and their, which I would consider incorrect, opinion that a sitting president cannot be indicted. So the fact that he's not a sitting president, the fact that we're years away from that happening.
Yeah.
No, man. If that's the case, why didn't Trump just say, yes, I'm running? You know what I'm saying? He could have said yes. Why didn't Trump say yes?
Because he hasn't decided when he's making the announcement before.
Well, why would it matter when if you already made? Why? See, come on, man. It's a hustle, man. You understand this, right? He's just trying to keep the grift of life.
The argument we've had is whether or not Trump will run.
Yes,
now, I've said more asterisks and say, but he's never going to win. He's never going to be able to pardon himself. I agree with you.
Crudy, if I say I'm running for president, does that mean I'm running for president? If I announced on this show that Dominic Salvia is running for president, does that mean I'm running for president?
It could. Theoretically.
Okay, but also probably not.
If he further steps to file as a candidate, it would. I think if he made the declaration, he would file as a candidate. He would be obligated to do so. Not that he gives a damn about the law, but it would be advantageous for him to make a legal declaration of candidacy. If he claims he's running, if he says, I'm running, they'll file the paperwork.
And then he's running.
And then he's running.
And then he's running. So then he runs. And then he gets indicted. And then what?
And then that plays itself out in the courts.
Is he still running then? You still think he's running?
Absolutely.
You think he would still run even with an indictment hanging over his head?
Especially with an indictment hanging over his head. Are you missing the point, man? He sees this as the get out of jail free card.
If you're convicted before you get into the White House, man, it doesn't do you any good.
You put it yourself. You stay out of prison.
I mean, come on,
yes,
man. This is insanity.
He theoretically could. It is insane, but that is his logic, right? That's his logic. Let's hear it from his former staffer. Let's hear it from Steve Bannon. Here's the description of the last election, and this is better be cleaned up for play on the FCC regulated
airwaves. You got all of them, Evan? There's a few bombs on there. All right, stand by the dump button.
Steve Bannon speaking in his, War Room podcast, and this was before the election, and he predicted how Trump would react. And this is a guy that knew him closest. I mean, if Bannon was looking for a guy to go smoke meth with, he's probably going to tap out Don. Hey, what are you doing, Don? Got some time to smoke some meth, allegedly?
Here's a little background of this. This came from Mother Jones, and here's what they say. On the evening of October 31st, 2020, Steve Bannon told a group of associates that President Donald Trump had a plan to declare victory on election night, even if he was losing. Trump... That's the point. So it's a group of people he was talking to. This was not
It's not the official War Room podcast. This was more of a clandestine taping of a private conversation, Dom?
Apparently. Now, we do have some comments from a Bannon spokesman after we played the sound. We'll get to that as well. But so this was to a group of people, not on his podcast. All right.
Mea culpa.
And what Trump's going to do is just declare victory, right? He's going to declare victory. But that doesn't mean he's the winner. He's just going to say he's the winner. The Democrats, more of our people vote early that count. Theirs voted mail. And so they're going to have a natural disadvantage, and Trump's going to take advantage of it. That's our strategy. He's going to declare himself a winner. So when you wake up Wednesday morning, it's going to be a firestorm. We're going to have Antifa crazy, the media crazy, the courts are crazy, and Trump's going to be sitting there mocking, tweeting, you lose. I'm the winner. I'm the king. And he'll be all over. He'll be going, where's Hunter? Is Hunter on a crack pipe? I mean, no, he'll be, because then it doesn't matter. Remember, here's the thing. After then, Trump never has to go to a voter again. He's going to fire Ray, the FBI director. He's going to say, F you. How about that? Because he's never going to, he's done his last election. Oh, he's going to be off the chain. He's going to be crazy. Also, if Trump is losing by 10 or 11 o'clock at night, it's going to be even crazier. Because he's going to sit right there and say they stole it. I'm directing the Attorney General to shut down all ballot places in all 50 states. It's going to be no. He's not going out easy. If Biden's winning, Trump is going to do some crazy shit.
Talking about a little sketchy, Dom. So the plan was in place, and Bannon describes it. And we effectively saw this plan play out in real time. We saw it play out when Trump came out and declared victory, right?
Frankly, we did win this election.
Declared victory, lost as you know what when Fox News declared Arizona for Joe Biden and has been fighting the outcome of the election ever frickin' since. So it's almost like Bannon had some insight. He said, this is the plan. Not like, I hope he does this. And obviously he's bragging. He's, you know, telling stories for the audience. And, you know, we occasionally do that, Dom. But it seemed like a pretty specific plan.
No doubt. Especially when the fact that Biden was up. And we've talked about this. And Bannon is right in this regard. How Republicans vote and how the trends are and how Democrats vote and when those votes are counted. So this was all part of the plan. This was all to cause the chaos, to cause the concern, the false concern. And so Trump is just going to declare it. Now, this was said on, October 31st of 2020. Now, a little bit more from the Mother Jones. The nearly hour-long audio obtained by Mother Jones is new evidence that Trump's late-night diatribe, which came a few hours later than Bannon had anticipated, followed a pre-existing plan to lie to Americans about the election results in a bid to hold on to power. The new recording stands out for the striking candor and detail with which Bannon described a scheme to use lies to subvert democracy. Bannon also predicted that Trump's false declaration of victory would lead to widespread political violence, along with crazy efforts by Trump to stay in office. Bannon and his associates laughed about those scenarios at various points, as you just heard. In a comment sent on Wednesday, a Bannon spokesperson argued that Bannon's statements on the recording are not news. A quote, "Nothing on the recording wasn't already said on War Room or on multiple other shows like The Circus on Showtime," the spokesperson said. Bannon gave that lecture multiple times from August to November to counter Mark Elias's election integrity project. Elias is a prominent Democrat election lawyer. The spokesman also said that the J6 committee, quote, "should have the courage to have Mr. Bannon come and testify publicly about these events."
Yes, let's do that. Or throw his ass in jail. I guess the trial starts Monday, Dom.
Trial starts Monday, and looking at a couple years, you know, maybe he can get, you know, and that's, can the Justice Department, can J6, can they put the screws to Bannon to such a degree that he ends up flipping on Trump? Because
no,
you know, my take on this is that you know, Bannon's speaking with this specificity because he's talked to the president about it. Now, if that's the case, that's certainly concerning, right? And I'm not convinced, man. I mean, these are a bunch of rats to begin with. If you're looking at, and we don't know right now, the one particular case that Bannon's looking at, this contempt of Congress, has a maximum of 2 years in prison. So that's just one thing. But depending on what else is out there and what else comes through and flushes out, you know, certainly for 2 years, maybe he wouldn't flip. If he's looking at 20, maybe he does. A follow-up article on this, I believe this is from Greg Sargent. Let's jump into this briefly. You can join us as well, 844-967-2789. Greg Sargent writing at the Washington Post. "What Trump's going to do is just declare victory." You heard Bannon say that, right? He's going to declare victory, but that doesn't mean he's a winner. He's just going to say he's a winner. And another, and this is actually true, I mean, Trump is certainly not a winner. He just says he's a winner, so he can act like he's a winner. Bannon, who played a key command center role on January 6th, said to a group of associates on October 31st, according to the audio, a few days later, Trump actually did this. He declared victory prematurely on election night, kicking off a months-long effort to cling to power illegitimately, culminating in the attack on the Capitol. On the auto, Bannon essentially gave away a crucial piece of Trump's whole corrupt scheme, but not in the way it first appears. Bannon has now opened the door to a host of new inquiries centered on this question. How premeditated a part of the coup plot was a premature declaration of victory for Trump? The answer may be that this was a more premeditated aspect of the scheme than we knew, which would deal a severe blow to Trump's last defenses. That he really believed he'd won and was innocently exercising what he thought were legal options in his response that may even increase his criminal exposure, so writes Greg Sargent. Many have noted that the audio confirms Trump intended to cast doubt on the outcome no matter what happened with the voting. Bannon says on the audio that this would cause a firestorm, which presumably would lay the groundwork for the next stage, months of corrupt scheming to reverse the results. "We already knew Trump had contemplated declaring victory on election night no matter what. Axios reported that just before the election, Trump privately told advisors he might do this. But the Bannon audio should refocus us on this forgotten fact. Trump telegraphed exactly these intentions way back in July of 2020. Speaking to reporters, he attacked vote by mail, said the winner should be declared on election night, and insinuated that millions of mail ballots would inevitably be fraudulent." That's the whole scheme right there. Trump was vague, but he essentially told us about 3 months before the 2020 election that he would declare victory on election night, even with millions of uncounted ballots outstanding, by arguing that they would be illegitimate. Now, here's why Bannon's audio is so relevant. On it, Bannon says much of the same thing, that Trump would be favored on election night because mail votes cast by Democrats would remain outstanding, and Trump would exploit this fact to declare himself the winner. And of course, Trump ended up doing exactly this. He declared victory and attacked outstanding ballots as part of an effort to steal the election from him. But part of this became the foundation of the coup architect John Eastman scheme to get Trump's vice president to illegally subvert Biden's electors and get the states to substitute new ones. So Bannon's articulation of the scheme in advance raises this question. To what degree was the premature declaration of victory discussed and agreed upon beforehand? Now just submit an answer. To a great degree. Of course it was. It absolutely was. The question is, who's going to come up and say it and admit to it and provide the tapes, perhaps, or at least testimony under oath?
I have every reason to believe the president knew it all.
Of course.
He knew from the beginning. He was stating it publicly in July of 2020. I mean, it's a little guilt going on. I mean, when you foreshadow your future guilt with a foreshadowing confession, I'm going to go kill a guy later. If he shoots someone on Fifth Avenue later, don't say he didn't warn us.
Right.
Come back. More Devil's Advocates. Don't say we didn't warn you. Call us 844-96-PARTY.
The level of stupidity is incredible.
On a warm summer's evening, on a train bound for nowhere.
The Devil's Advocates, radio for the 99%.
Both too tired to sleep.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Your calls always welcome. Lightly screened by Evan at 844-967-2789.
Dom, before we get there, I got to bring your attention to PolitiFact, a Wisconsin turn on PolitiFact. And Donald Trump, the subject of this very PolitiFact, here's what Trump reportedly said. And I know it's true. I saw it on the Truthy Social.
The Wisconsin Supreme Court decision declaring ballot drop boxes illegal includes the 2020 presidential election.
And according to the fine folks at PolitiFact, that is a pants-on-fire lie.
What?
A little bit here, setting the context, just in case you haven't been paying close attention. Trump is back on the hot seat with the claim linking the ballot box ruling to the 2020 election. The former president, Trump, who, you know, fell nearly 21,000 votes short of winning Wisconsin in the 2020 presidential, has never really accepted defeat in the Badger State. Not after his own recount request in Milwaukee and Dane counties actually increased Joe Biden's margin of victory. Not after a series of lawsuits failed. Not after the election results were certified. Not after the electoral votes were counted. After Biden was sworn in. Or in the face of expert after expert saying there's no evidence of widespread fraud and no way to undo the result. Well, no one told Ram Jam either. So maybe it's no surprise that Trump now apparently wants to go back in time. On July 8, 2022, the Wisconsin State Supreme Court ruled that Wisconsin law does not permit drop boxes anywhere other than the election clerk offices, and that only state lawmakers may make new policy stating otherwise, not the Wisconsin Elections Commission, which had issued guidance, you know, during a pandemic. Following the decision, Trump took to the social media platform Truthy Social and Telegram to declare,
other states are looking at it and studying the amazing Wisconsin Supreme Court decision declaring ballot boxes illegal, all caps. And that decision includes the 2020 presidential election.
As PolitiFact notes, in other words, he is claiming the decision is retroactive and, in his view, could somehow cancel the result. That's plainly nonsense. The ruling doesn't look backwards. Let's start with some basic facts. The drop boxes have been set aside. But anyways, the conclusion is, no, you're full of malarkey, Trump. You're a pants-on-fire liar, but we all knew that about the man.
If we keep saying it, do you think like some of these Republicans running for office now will eventually believe it? I mean, the J6 committee is chock full of Republican strategists, employees, and appointees, Republicans, all GOPers, right? They're the ones testifying, saying these things about Donald Trump. This isn't Bernie Sanders. This isn't AOC. Right? These are other fellow Republicans. And we talked about this Hill piece today. another bunch of eight Republicans, a couple of whom have testified before J6. There is no there. There never was. The whole thing was a plan by Trump to stay in power. That was it.
So let's review of Trump's prior claims about the state of Wisconsin. On September 29th, 2020, Trump claimed ballots in Wisconsin are being dumped in the rivers or creeks. At the time, PolitiFact rated that claim false. Apparently, we weren't dumping our ballots in creeks.
Wait, false or pants on fire?
Just false.
I mean, so were some dumped in the creek? What are you talking about?
November 18th of 2020, Trump claimed, a day after the election, Biden received a dump of 143,379 votes at 3:42 a.m. in Wisconsin when they learned he was losing badly. This is unbelievable. They rated that claim pants on fire. That'll make you more satisfied, Dom.
Thank you.
On December 2nd of 2020, Trump claimed, in Wisconsin, there are approximately 70,000 absentee ballots that do not have the matching ballot applications as required by law. PolitiFact rated that claim pants on fire. Another one made by Trump on December 2nd of 2020, Trump claimed in a speech that residents the Wisconsin Elections Commission suspected of moving were illegal voters. They just called that claim false. And June 25th of 2021, Trump claimed Republican leaders are working hard to cover up election corruption in Wisconsin. We rated this claim pants on fire, although I would take some nits and pick with the PolitiFact staffers there, because I do think Republicans are working hard to cover up election corruption, or at least corruption in Wisconsin. And on June 26, 2021, Trump claimed, in 2020, we won Wisconsin. They did rate that as a pants on fire bomb. One more Trump rating from the PolitiFact folks. August 12, 2021, Trump claimed, a Milwaukee election employee even acknowledged dropping off the margin of ballots needed for a Biden win at 3 a.m. That did not happen either. They also rated that pants on fire. So he's got about as good a record at the PolitiFact Wisconsin as he does in the federal courts trying to overturn the electoral results. Let's go to the phones. 844-967-2789. Joe from Madison. Welcome back, Joe. What do you got?
Hello, Joe.
I want to talk about the subject that you, Dom, brought up in the first session. It was on the Intercept article that looked at the magic disappearing
Secret Service text from January 5th and 6th.
Yeah.
You know, they had a little phone replacement issue. You know, they didn't want to turn over their texts, so they replaced their phones.
Do you know how many that included? Did they say how many Secret Service agents suddenly had this magic, mysterious problem? Was it all of them who were working on that day?
This is still pretty new breaking news, Joe. So, no, we don't have flushed out information about how many different Secret Service agents were apparently, and we don't know for sure, but apparently deleting their text after they've been requested to preserve them. But I got to think that's at least got to be something that goes in your employment file, wouldn't you think, Dad?
Device replacement program, Joe.
If you are still employed, if you are a government employee that just magically deletes all these things on such an amazing coincidence of the 5th and 6th of January when all of this stuff is going on, and suddenly we cannot find the text.
Well, then I got to wonder, Joe, if it's true, if they're claiming a device replacement program, like how does that work, right? Did they just go around and collect all the phones and give them a new phone? Who ordered the device replacement program, right? What were the circumstances of the device replacement program? And why do they do it after specifically getting notice that people wanted to, the government, OIG, wanted to preserve those records?
Yeah, isn't that kind of against the law? I mean, aren't you obstructing when you go ahead and delete things? I kind of, you know, am I old-fashioned, for heaven's sake?
That's such a quaint notion, Joe. That's so sweet.
Isn't it? So naive. So naive. Thank you, guys. Helpful as always.
All right. Thank you, Joe. Appreciate you calling, and thank you for listening.
You know, Trump did this little interview with the New York Magazine. He was questioned about his daughter's testimony to the January 6th committee. And here's how Trump tried to explain it away.
Well, I think she wanted to be nice and respectful. She's a very high quality person, and I don't think she wanted to hurt anybody's feelings.
Yes, that must be it. Come back, more devils.